Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
One is Mark and John's the other. They're just friends. They are not lovers. It's two old queens. It's two old queens. They're just sassy, not that mean. Two old queens. It's two old queens.
Now shut up.
Hello.
Welcome to Two Old Queens. I'm John Flynn.
I'm Mark Rennie.
Mark, who is our guest today?
You don't know? You're looking right at him.
Let other people know. That's who I am.
You're not excited?
I'm very excited.
Okay. He's a puppeteer on Crank Anchors. You've seen him on Disney Channel's Coop and Cammy. And also, hello, Broadway Cred Alert much? The original cast of Book of Mormon, it's Ben Schrader.
Yay.
Hello,
yay.
Ben.
Well, you've made that sound so exciting.
Well, it is exciting. We're very excited to have
you. I've seen Book of Mormon on the Broadway.
With the OBC back in 2011 through 2013?
Probably not. So as someone, we're doing a whole month of musicals. This is our third week of musicals. As someone who's been in actual real live musicals, when you see a musical movie or on stage, are you able to just enjoy it, or are you always thinking of like what went into it?
Whenever I see any movie, I think about what went into it just because I'm into that. But I don't, I'm a terrible audience because I'm really forgiving. I always look at these things and go like,
people hate
look
that.
How much work, they hate it. I always go, look how much work they put into it. But I also am terrible because I will see a movie. There have been plenty of movies that I now look on and I go, oh, I hate that movie. But I left it at the time going like, that wasn't bad. And then the people around me go, well, what about this? And what about this? And what about this? And then I go, oh, you're right. And then like right before their eyes, my integrity deteriorates.
Oh, no.
I go like, oh, that was a shit movie. Why was I looking at it like it was not a crap movie?
Why did I experience joy?
I was
never
wrong.
Let myself do that.
That's right.
I was wrong to do that. Mm-hmm. I always say I've never regret seeing any movie. Like I've never seen a movie and thought, I wish I hadn't seen that. You know what I mean? Because even if something's bad, there's always something to get from it. The worst the movie can be is boring.
Right.
But even then, I'm always like, well, I would have wanted to see how. You know, I'm always curious to see how the movies play out.
That's true. I've found that I've left going, well, at least I'm full.
Absolutely. Are you a fan of the movie musical? Like, can you enjoy a movie musical even if it's not the idealized Broadway version?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Because I think the big mistake is when they take a musical and they take all the things that they did on stage and they think that that's just going to translate to the screen, as opposed to let's just write it for the screen. And what it tends to be when they do that, then it's pretty good, or at least better than some. If they just think that they can shoot the musical, then it looks like, usually looks like one of those Cameron Mackintosh musicals that they shoot, you know? So I think they just have to cater it to the medium. You know, that's my
high. Do you have like a favorite movie musical?
Of the ones that are like Broadway musicals that went to, I do think Fiddler on the Roof, they turned that into an effective movie. Yeah. They shoot that in a way that's very cinematic and they don't treat it like the Broadway stage show. Chicago, Cabaret. And then if you look at the old, even though the aesthetic has changed, like the old musicals, like The Music Man, they did it, I think, is a good film. But yeah, I don't know. Then there's like Sweeney Todd doesn't work. You know, Hair is a really bad, Hair doesn't really work for me. But yeah,
I think Hair works better as a movie than it does as a stage musical. I think that's one of the few that does work better as a movie.
Do they have the nudity in the movie? I can't remember.
There's definitely some toplessness. I think there's like a little bit, but not really. Like, it's not like this is the moment where we all get naked that there is in the show.
Right. Yeah, I don't remember, but I mean, that was like a rental in high school, I think.
So edgy. Running hair.
Wow. Hey, guys.
No one else was renting.
We're having a sleepover. We're going to watch Hair.
Right.
Everyone else was renting O Calcutta, but you went to Hair.
I went right to Hair. Blockbuster. Blockbuster never had no copies of Hair for me to rent.
They knew you were coming.
Oh, reliable.
That's right. Here comes that one guy who only rents Hair and Fiddler on the Roof. On VHS.
Speaking of long, tall freaks, we're talking about the movie you chose to bring in, Labyrinth. John, tell us a little bit about Labyrinth.
Well, thank you. I would love to. Labyrinth came out in 1986. It is a musical fantasy film directed by Jim Henson. Executive producer was George Lucas, and it was based on a conceptual designs by Brian Froud, I believe it is. It revolves around a 16-year-old Sarah's quest to reach the center of an enormous otherworldly maze, aka a labyrinth, to rescue her infant brother, Toby, who Sarah somehow wished away to Jareth the Goblin King. It stars Jennifer Connelly as Sarah, David Bowie is the Goblin King, and Toby Froud plays Toby the baby. The rest of the film's significant characters are played by puppets produced by Jim Henson's Creature Shop. The film was a box office disappointment, grossing only $12.9 million during its original run. It was the last feature that Jim Henson directed. But despite its mixed critical response, it has a large cult following. And in January of 2016, it was announced that a remake was in development, which the screenwriter described more as a spin-off in the same fictional universe than a remake. There you have it.
Got it. So Ben,
just
we asked
old-fashioned, old-fashioned boy meets girl story.
Yeah,
we asked you to bring in a movie musical, and you chose Labyrinth. So why Labyrinth?
Well, that was my virtual babysitter growing up. When I was a latchkey kid, so okay. When I came home from school, you know, the movies that sometimes that would get rented for me to like occupy myself, or when my parents were working over the summer and I stayed home. Were these, you know, the Muppet movies, which were all musicals, and then the kind of offshoot Muppet movies like Labyrinth or The Dark Crystal. Labyrinth stuck with me because that was my introduction to David Bowie. I didn't know his rock star career. I didn't know anything. I just knew this huge Barbizon hairstyle and this codpiece.
Yeah.
And it was strange because it was a very predominantly shot codpiece. And a really interesting choice. And I just remember being very affected by not just the codpiece, but like David Bowie slithering around and being menacing but also really enticing. He was cool but scary. It was all of these things. And then you had these grotesque puppets, and then they all sang rock numbers. And it's a movie that would never get made today. It's the kind of music that was, even for David Bowie, was very strange for him. Mm-hmm. And it just was nightmare fuel that I couldn't stop watching over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So have you revisited it recently? Like, is it something you always return to?
Oh, it's like Labyrinth is, it's in the forefront of my brain, sadly. Oh, wow. Every, for some reason, every day, I'll be doing a mundane thing, and, you know, the one of the Goblin King, you know, musical numbers will come into my mind, like, you remind me of the babe with the power, and all of this kind of thing. And so it's one of those, now it's kind of like every Hot Topic in every mall sells a Labyrinth t-shirt. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I was into that crap before they started merchandising.
Okay. Yeah.
Merchandising pop figures, you know.
We get it. Yeah. And you're the original cast of Book of Mormon. We got it. You have authenticity.
Your Labyrinth shirt was an iron-on that you had to put on yourself. Yeah.
as was the codpiece.
Yeah.
Sure. So, John, what's your history with Labyrinth?
I had seen it, I guess, years ago, maybe sometime in the 90s, once, and then I watched it again last night.
Okay.
That's pretty much it. I remember. It's a movie that obviously, it has a lot of fun visuals to it, but, like, I couldn't have told you the story. And so I watched it again last night. So it is I was familiar with it, but I wouldn't say I knew that much about it.
Did you rewatching it?
I did, very much. Overall, I get why this movie doesn't seem to transcend the generation it came out of for. You know what I mean? Like, there's some kids' movies that, like, live on. Like, I feel like Willy Wonka, like, with Gene Wilder. Like, that one, people younger than me know. People, like, my nieces and nephews know that movie. Labyrinth, I don't feel like, is a movie that has, like, grown as much as those kind of movies. And I think it's because the visuals are great. Like, it's really fun. All the visuals are really great. And it's exciting because it's mostly real and practical effects. But there's no real story there. Like, I don't know what this main character, like, wants. She just, like, things happen to her constantly. I don't know what she learns. I don't know, like, what's in her way. It's just, like, she's like, oh, and now it's this, and now it's this, and now it's this, and now it's this, and it's fun. And then it's over, and you're like, what just happened? And then also the very last moment, you're like, what is happening right now? The very last moment is bananas, undeniably. I think if it had a solid story to go along with those great visuals and all those great effects, it could be a classic. But I think at the heart of it, there's no real story there. But it was great to watch again. Like, it is, like, each of the segments are good. Sure. Like, they are fun. Like, there's obviously, it reminded me kind of like anything directed by Julie Taymor. We're like, it's fun to watch, but the storytelling is really not good. But if you had someone with a good story and you directed, or if you just art directed it, it would have been phenomenal. That's what I thought. How about you, Mark? What's your history with Labyrinth?
Well, I'm a big Muppets fan, as you may know.
I think we all are, yes.
Grew up with them, love them. But Labyrinth was one I had seen in pieces, I think. But I can't remember the last time, if ever, I sat down and watched it from beginning to end. And you're right. It is beautiful to look at. But you could put almost, once she enters the Labyrinth, you could put the scenes in almost any order, and it doesn't matter. So the whole time you're wondering, wait, why does Jareth want the baby? Like, it feels like there's no stakes at any time. But I get it's meant to be like a psychological representation, but I almost wish they went into that even harder of, like, this is a labyrinth of her own mind and, you know, the struggle to become, grow up and do away with childish things.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's definitely weird. Bowie is great in it, though. Mm-hmm. I think he really is like a unique screen presence, to say the least. but it is one of those movies that's like, oh, it's prettier than it is interesting. So I think
there's a lot of like, oh, I was just going to say that there's a lot of like dissertations on the true underpinnings and meanings of it that I think most of it is kind of crap. But there is like one of the stronger like, that a lot of people think is the real thing is like, oh, it's about this girl's sexual awakening, and it's about, and they really go into it, and I'm like, yeah, I think you're just projecting on the sexiness of David Bowie in the role. I don't know if they're really saying that this girl is, you know, but there is this big kind of agreed upon in the zeitgeist that it's about her finding her, you know, like sexual awakening thing. And I'm like, well, maybe there's a part of me that I guess had some questions answered, but I don't know. I'm not sure.
I don't know. Or it could just be like creepy male academics projecting onto a virginal teen girl.
Yeah.
I kind of think it's that.
What else could it be about? It's got to be about her sexuality. That's all I see when I look at her. It's her sexuality. How dare she thrust this on me?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's get into it. As you may or may not know, we are looking for the gayest movie ever. So we have a very elaborate and Byzantine scoring system with which to judge this, with a bunch of categories. And at the end, you are going to add a category and it could become
canon.
I don't know why I paused either. So we got a ton of categories, but it's let me do our, this is the top five current ranking and it's out of percentage. So this is the percentage out of 100% of where we currently stand. All right. So number five was 71.84%, Interview with the Vampire. Number four, 76.52%, Funny Girl. Number three was 78.43%, Cats. Number two was 78.59%, Bradley Cooper's The Star is Born. And number one was 79.51%, Grease 2. So we will see where Labyrinth falls in. This is our second Jim Henson movie.
That's right. Yeah, Muppets Take Manhattan was the gayest movie for a very long time, and now it's not even in the top
5 or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. It got bumped.
We changed the system.
Older movies. Oh, I was going to say.
That's right. All right. So the first category is homoeroticism. So on a scale of 0 to 100, how homoerotic is Labyrinth? So we're each going to give it a score, then we take the average of all three of ours.
See, here's what's hard about this movie is that there are two.
What's hard about it, John?
The audience. There are only two real actual people in it for the most part. Everything else are puppets. So there's not a lot.
Muppets can't be gay. Have you met Janice?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that like there's not a lot.
Jury's out on Scooter.
Janice isn't gay.
Scooter.
I think Janice. Well, sure.
Sam the Eagle. Closet
well,
queen.
Yeah. He's
gay.
Very Mike Pence. Yeah.
Yeah. He's very Chris Cooper in American Beauty.
I don't think it's not a very homoerotic movie, even though like David Bowie is undeniably just like sexy.
Yes.
But is he like flirting with any of these goblins? I mean, it's hard. It's difficult.
Right. He has like a big gay queer energy though.
Sure.
He does the juggling of the balls.
That's true. Well, that actually wasn't him. That was someone else behind him.
That was Michael Motion, who is a contact juggler. There you go. What is a contact juggler?
What does that mean?
People who can take like either rings or they can take crystal balls and they can move them in their hands. They can rotate them and give them the illusion that they're either suspended in space or, you know, it's a skill. It's like it's like mime with objects in a way. And so this guy named Michael Motion, M-O-S-H-E-N, who can do this amazing motion with his hands, and he subbed for his arms. So there's this like, there is this diddling of these big balls.
That's true.
The other moment is interesting when they introduce this, when they introduce the character of Hoggle, he gets introduced by he's standing and he's peeing on the wall. And it was the first time when I kind of went, well, I think Muppets have, male Muppets have dicks.
They got some junk.
As a kid, I went like, well, that answers that question.
There you go. Genitals are real.
There are goblin genitals.
There is something undeniably homoerotic, though, about David Bowie with a riding crop and those boots, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, Ben, what would you score this on 0 to 100 for homoeroticism?
I can only base it on my personal interaction with this movie. It made me question a few things growing up. So
wonderful.
From 1 to 100, I'm going to put it solidly in the 80s.
81.
Well, let's put it
I need an exact number.
Let's put it at 80. I'm going to put it at 81.
So this is one of the most homoerotic movies you've ever seen.
Not necessarily. 81's not 100.
81 is not 100, but 81
I know
81,
that much about math.
Okay.
But it did bring my mind to places that maybe it didn't venture to before when I was in an impressionable youth.
And we thank Jim Henson for that.
That's right.
John, what are you going to give it?
I'll go 80.
80?
80.
Oh, so you Price is Righted me there.
Yeah. I will not do one, but I'm going to do like, for me, it's like 35. It's not really.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there is something, but it's not a lot. We're still in a kid's movie.
Sure, sure.
All right, next category.
But it's making kids question things, clearly.
That's true.
We have some receipts right here.
All right, next category. Actual gay characters. I mean,
that's
there
a
are
challenge.
There are literally fairies.
There are fairies.
There are literally fairies.
Hoggy, at first I was like, he does love jewelry. Like, that's how, like, she's trying to woo him, to bribe him to get him to do stuff. So,
but that seemed more, he'd never wore jewelry, though. But it seemed more, right, like, motivated by greed than...
Perhaps.
If he wore it,
what about,
then...
What do we think? What was the name of that little dog that rode the other dog?
Yes, Sir Didymus. His name is Sir Didymus.
He did a miss, not if it was Sir did a mister.
And it always reminded me of the epididymis, which is a piece of male anatomy.
Alrighty.
So this movie is like unpacks a lot of things for you. It sounds like.
I'm just putting two and two together here, gentlemen.
Okay.
I appreciate that. But I don't think there are that many actual gay characters.
No, I mean, even though Bowie, you know, the Goblin King is kind of, he's out there and he's larger than life with his garb and his makeup and everything. He's going after her really hardcore.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
She's also giving off a very alpha, you know, kind of this, you know, very intense energy to her too. I don't know. That doesn't necessarily, it's not a gender normative.
It was weird, like, watching her. I was like, she's a very specific sort of, like, theater girl, because she was, like, super into theater, but not really into musicals.
Yeah, she's really
she
into
had posters.
She did have some, yeah, she was more
she had posters
that
for
girl.
Evita and Cats.
That is correct. I understand that, but that was probably a lazy set dresser. But
that was an inspired set dresser.
I didn't get the sense that he had, like, a sexual attraction towards her, though. Like, I didn't get that at all.
Not at the ball he does. At that ball scene he kind of does. When he's trying to seduce her, he's literally trying to seduce her.
I guess so. It seemed more like a power move than to actually something that
I mean, isn't that all seduction, John?
No.
Isn't all a power transference? Isn't that what sex is in some way? So what do you want to give this for actual gay characters?
Well, you know, you could argue to give it a high score based on inference, but just on the surface, I wouldn't put it very high. I would put it probably actual gay characters. I'd put it in the in the 20s maybe.
I'm going to need a specific number, Ben.
Gosh, this is hard. You guys play hardball here. I'm going to
put we're not messing around.
I'm going to put it at a 27.
27.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we have literal fairies. We have a bunch of goblins who you think something will happen there.
What are they gobbling exactly?
Much,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what are those weird things on the edges of sticks they had?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go 20. I'll go 28.
28?
Gosh, you are really Bob Barkering this.
I'm going to give this a 5.
Wow.
For not any actual gay characters in it.
Okay.
All right, next category. On a scale of 0 to 100, camp factor. How campy is Labyrinth?
Labyrinth's pretty damn campy.
It's pretty campy.
Yeah. But the question really is it meaning to be? And is that a prequisite for camp?
There's different worlds.
One movie
there's
can have both
There's knowing camp and
times,
there's unknowing
you know?
Camp.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a
There is an extra thrill camp. To unknown camp.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this is unknowing camp in a way that like a Mommy Dearest is, because like right. It is already in a fantasy crazy world anyway. But I mean, still, when you're just like, how about this character can sing, talk to rocks? That still can't be.
Yeah.
Sure.
But
anyone
you can
who's
say
singing
that
to
most
rocks.
80s,
to do that.
Most 80s family movies or like fantasy family movies were campy. I mean, that's like
absolutely
what generates that nostalgia that we have right now.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
Absolutely.
Go. I'm going to give this, and I think this is run of the mill, 68 on the camp factor.
68.
Yes.
I'm going to go higher because I do think it's sort of some really fun visuals. I'm going to go, but it is a lot, it's a lot of earth tones. So I am going to give it, ding it for that. So I'm going to go 79.
Mm-hmm. You can't be earth tones, it can't be. Sorry.
It's tough. Too
Lust
many
in
earth
the dust.
Tones. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I got a list. Here's the campy things I found. An owl being involved in magical business, struggling to remember your lines, rehearsing in full costume for no reason, wearing blue jeans under a pretty dress, saying to a baby, I hate you. MC Escher, an actress getting out her anger by delivering character monologues to the mirror, long white drapes floating in a moonlight breeze, juggling, David Bowie throwing a snake at you and it turns into a scarf, a Muppet holding a live chicken, a sassy door knocker, a dreamy masquerade ball where a virginal teenager is seduced by David Bowie, landing in a junkyard, having a poster of Evita on your wall, breaking a spell, and finally ending your movie with all the characters dancing.
Oh, no, you know, when you put it like that in list form, you really
do. You want
to
change your number?
I really do.
You can. You can. What
I
would
need,
you like to change
I need,
it to?
I need to change this to an 84.
84.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I forgot about the drapes. I forgot about the owl. I forgot about the computer generated floating at the beginning. You know,
yes.
All of that.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it a 70.
Wow. I really went out on a limb and you guys really pulled it back.
Hey, you love it. That's great. There's no right answer. There's no right or wrong.
That's why we
correct.
Take an average. Right.
Yeah, we take an average. Given it got an average of 77.67. That's more than Bradley Cooper's A Star Is Born, so you're doing
yeah,
fine.
There you go, yeah.
Oh. All right, next category. Over the top wardrobe.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, well, even just like her Jennifer Connelly's opening outfit, like with those sleeves, that sort of like Renaissance fair.
Her vest and
thing
fluffy
that she was
sleeves.
Wearing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like her stepmom had that very like very intense pink blouse at the very beginning of the movie.
That's where you're going.
I was like, this
elaborate.
Is her look. I mean, there's so few looks to focus on for people.
What are you
that
talking
you have
about?
To,
Hoggle had a vest with a face on it.
Yeah,
he's a character. That's wardrobe.
And did he change it at all the entire movie?
Neither did the mother. She was in that. We only ever saw her in that dress.
Exactly. So there's fewer outfits. So we gotta really focus on them. But yeah, I thought her. I don't know where she was going for dinner, but I don't want to go there.
Probably Red Lobster.
Probably, and that baby was in like a striped pirate onesie.
Yes.
And
but
then
the Goblin
the
King's
ball.
Great. Yeah,
the ball that was great. All crazy.
She has a very crazy wedding outfit, and that's huge. Mm-hmm. The most puffy sleeves.
Yeah, costume-wise, yeah. There was a lot of work put into this one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's that Brian Froud, you know, is that his name, the designer?
It is.
He
yeah.
did. He did Dark it Crystal is. Too, and everything is like, I just love how everything's like almost like it looks lived in and like really ultra detailed. Like there's so yeah. much like detail to everything, and it always looks great.
A lot of layers. They're into layers.
A lot mm-hmm. of layers. It looks like a real lived in world. But is it the most over the top wardrobe we've ever seen? I don't know.
I mean,
what do you want to give it?
It's kind of. I mean it. It rivals, or it's approaching the Met Gala in that one ball. In that ball,
I
machine.
Wish they did.
Oh,
the theme
a
was labyrinth.
Met Gala. Oh, that'd be great.
They would.
I'm
they
gonna
don't have
put
the guts.
This. They don't have the guts or the rights. I'm gonna put this. I'm gonna stay in the 80s for this. I'm gonna put this in the high 80s. 88.
88.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go 83.
83. I mean, anytime you have a dog wearing a saddle, I mean, that's
yeah,
pretty an
that's
actual
true.
Live dog. I'll give
so
it
for another
an,
dog to ride.
Right. I'm going to give it an 82. This is pretty up there. Give it an average of 84.33. That's more than Cats.
Okay.
All right. Next category. Drag queen inspiration. Could a drag queen watch this and come away with a lot of inspiration?
I mean, just the fact that David Bowie's in it.
Yeah. And his eye makeup is great.
His eye makeup is great. That
There's
wig
also
is
that,
pretty iconic.
That one character with a bird on their head.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like, why isn't a drag queen doing that?
And the music itself, like if you really listen to the lyrics of some of these songs, they're really rife with like this high fantasy longing, sitting in a corner bemoaning your existence sometimes. Like they're over the top. They're worse than Sting lyrics, and I love Sting. They're worse. You know,
Sting
no
was
one...
almost the Goblin King.
he was almost the Goblin King, you know, and he was going to write all the music, and it probably would have been the same exact songs, at least for this movie, except Bowie transferred out of it and was of the time. Sting stayed solidly right in this era.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think this is like, there's some good makeup instructional moments in this movie. There's the hair.
A couple of tutorials.
Yeah.
The junkyard lady, someone could dress up as her.
Oh, she's
have a bunch of shit on your back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right?
The fairies.
Those fiery people.
The fieries. Yeah. I like the riddle guys. Anyone at the ball.
Oh, yeah.
The riddle guys, mm-hmm, who's one upside down and one's cards. Right side up. The doorknobs. Yep. That's inspiration fuel right there.
Yeah.
So what would you get
looks out of this?
I'm going to put this at 85.
85.
Yeah. I'm going to go 87.
Wow. 87. I'll go 88. I mean, yeah. That Goblin King alone. You could have a whole night of a night of 1,000 Goblin Kings.
There you go.
Or Queens.
Thank you.
All right, next category. On a scale of 0 to 100, how likely are you to recommend this to gay people?
I think I just did. 100%.
Hello?
100%.
Hello. 100%.
100%.
You just came out to your parents who have kicked you out on the street. You gotta see Labyrinth.
The first thing, that's the first thing I say.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Trevor Project. Here's a DVD of Labyrinth.
Yeah. Right. You're navigating the maze of your sexuality to find the self at the center.
It's like an M.C. Escher playground. Mm-hmm. Here you go.
John, what are you going to give it?
I'm going to say 82.
That's pretty high. That's almost double what you gave Interview with the Vampire.
Really?
You gave Interview with the Vampire 48.
I'll go 70 on this one. Because I think it's like good, but like, again, the story isn't like, there's nothing iconic about the story that grabs you. But I'm like, oh, if you want to see a bunch of fun visuals, yeah, watch this movie.
Yeah, this movie's, I mean, if you're thinking about it along the terms of, is this going to benefit anybody?
Right. It's not like, you need to know these Labyrinth references. People are always talking about baby Toby in this bird hat. So you've got to know it.
You got to know it. I'm going to give it a 25.
Okay.
You'll just watch a YouTube of magic dance and you'll be fine. That's Labyrinth. You got it. All right. The next category, the male gaze. How horny is the camera for the male form? I mean,
it's all about Bowie in those pants, really.
There's literally close-ups of his crotch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Jim Henson. I mean, he was like a progressive, crunchy granola kind of guy. So
He was. He was kind of... To be honest, like, he was into everybody. He was, from what I understand, like, he loved people, and, you know, but he loved people. So I have a feeling there was definitely no
message received.
You know, gotcha.
I
mean?
But I feel like there was no, like, don't, like, maybe let's not focus. This is a cool camera angle, but we managed to get David Bowie's codpiece in it, so maybe we have to change it. I think he would have been like, no, this is a great camera angle. He looks fantastic. We keep this to
this
hell
is the
everything.
Moment. This is part of life. Yeah.
That's right.
This is also one of the, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like this is one of the few Muppet or Henson movies where you see a person from top to bottom, a full size, and also they're surrounded by Muppets. Because usually when you see, like, the Muppets, you only see the person from, like,
everyone
the waist
from the waist up.
Right.
But I feel like it's one of the few instances, and, like, that was, it was just, I wish she would have made more movies. That's what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you want to give this for the male gaze? I do feel like his crotch is, like, an iconic thing. Like, when you talk to people about Labyrinth, that's one of the first things that's brought up, so to speak.
Yeah.
I place this at 83.
83.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go 86.
86. You ain't 86 in that crotch.
Mm-mm.
I'll give it an 80. That's pretty male gazy. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. Next category. Entrances with pizzazz.
I mean, this is all about that.
Yeah.
It's all about it. I mean, you have an entrance with pizzazz.
Yeah, there's that with pizzazz. It starts with Jennifer Connelly just like running like up a hill, like just from around the corner.
Looks like a Kate Bush video.
Yeah, exactly. Every time David Bowie shows up, it's like pizzazzy.
Yeah, there's a wind machine. He's floating in. I mean, he's feathered. He's like softly lit. I mean, he looks unbelievable. That's like one of the greatest lighting.
Yeah. It's up there with Glinda the Good Witch.
It really is.
I like
but even
entrance.
Like when he's like the like that homeless person and he like takes off the thing and he just like stands sure. up. That's pizzazzy.
That's pizzazz. That's
yeah.
Pizzazz.
Do you remember mm-hmm. like in the 80s, like everyone or at least someone in your household, if they were of the age, had those Harlequin masks hanging on their walls? Like
yes.
that was
yes.
a huge. This movie is if you could turn the aesthetic of that Harlequin mask yes. hanging on the wall mm-hmm. next to your Phantom of the Opera poster, yeah. this was that.
Yeah,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. Also, there's that one fun scene where he throws the crystal ball down like the dark hallway, and then it turns into the drill machine, the cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
That's a given that you're not quite sure what yeah. you're seeing, but then you realize you're in danger. It has a dreamlike quality, and I love that. So, what would you give this, Ben, for entrances with pizzazz?
Entrance with pizzazz. I'm putting this at 91.
91.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna go 90. It's pretty high for me too.
90. I will also give it a 90. It's pretty good. All right, next category: dramatic lighting.
There's a ton. I thought especially, I loved it. One of my favorite sequences is when she's falling and all the helping hands. That's really fun.
Yeah,
that's
so gross.
For that was dramatic. I mean, especially now, all those hands touching you.
Can you imagine?
Could you imagine? And then like when she's in the prison cell, she's in that very like
yeah.
stark lighting. There's a lot of dramatic lighting on that.
Almost every scene has like great lighting.
Yeah, he's always kind of in a beam of light and they always give him these lines that are very, one of my favorite lines, and it was the first time I ever heard this word, and I didn't know it was an actual word. But, you know, they're all screaming, and he's looking into the water or whatever it is, seeing where she's at, and he goes, quiet, you know, to all the goblins. They're all making noise. He goes, quiet. And he goes, she's in the oubliette. And they all go, ooh. And he goes, no, she never should have gotten that far. And I was like, I used to go around the house going, she's in the oubliette. And I didn't know what an oubliette was. And it's a thing. It's a real thing. But I love the
thing,
word.
Yeah.
What is an oubliette?
It's like a maze.
It's like a prison cell.
Yeah.
No, it's like a prison cell where the entrance is like high in the ceiling. So
there
it's you like
go.
You can just, so there's no way to get out of it without help.
I love it. She's in the oubliette.
So what are you going to give Labyrinth for dramatic lighting?
I'm going to give this a 93.
93.
Yeah.
The Jurassic Park came out.
Right. Yes, I'll also go 93.
Yes.
93. I gotta go 88. Sometimes okay. it's still just a little soft. I would have wanted a little more color, just a little more pop, a little more something.
A little less earth tones. Gotcha.
A little less earth tones.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next yeah. category. Strident women.
I think Jennifer Connelly's kind of strident in this.
Well, she's her mother. You're an
her
hour
the,
late.
The stepmother.
Is that her stepmother or
is
her
it
real
her mother,
mother
or stepmother? I thought
I
it was
her mother.
I don't know. They really flush that character.
You fast forward those first 10 minutes.
I don't know.
Yeah. The junk lady also is kind of strident.
Yeah.
Sure. That worm.
Is that a lady?
Well, it's puppeteered by a lady, I saw, and the voice by a lady.
The okay. worm isn't because I think he says, come inside, you'll meet the missus. You know, so I think
maybe it's a lesbian.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
I'm just joking.
You know,
I don't know. Probably
that,
not.
That didn't seem like
a lesbian.
Oh, so
there is an actual gay character. So let's go back.
That's true. It could have been. I didn't think about it.
Could have been, but probably not.
Mm-hmm.
The most strident person here is Sarah's mother, I think.
But Jennifer Connelly, I mean, like she wishes for a goblin king to take her baby
That's
brother
true.
Away.
That's
true.
And we have to respect that.
If she had a nicer temper, this whole movie wouldn't have happened.
But she wouldn't have grown and learned either.
But what did she learn?
You got to grow up, but also remember things from your childhood.
What a lesson.
I'm not saying it was a good lesson, but it's a lesson. So what do you want to give this for strident women?
Strident women, I give this, I'm going to place it at 65.
65.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 71.
71. I'm going to go like 50. It's pretty middle of the road for me. I've seen more strident.
I think all the women in this are strident to some degree, though.
Your score reflected that. All right, next category. Macabre. How macabre is Labyrinth?
It's pretty macabre.
You're stealing a baby.
Yeah.
Killing a baby.
You got those weird feather creatures who are just like taking off their heads and throwing them around.
Yeah,
that was upsetting.
It's very, I think that's a main aesthetic for this film. For any of these kind of films
yes.
outside of like traditional Muppets, it's pretty macabre.
Yeah. These people aren't showing up on Sesame Street.
No. And it's all about like body part removal or the threat of death or spikes or getting lost forever or falling into the bog of eternal stench.
Yeah.
Right. Which also look like buttholes.
It's just a big old bog of muddy buttholes.
And now that's macabre.
That's right.
So what do you want to give this for macabre?
Well, it'd probably get a higher score if the film was called Bog of Muddy Buttholes, but
absolutely.
I'm going to put this at an 89.
Yeah, I'm going to go 87 for macabre.
Yeah.
87. Yeah, I'll go 80. It's pretty macabre. Giving an average of 85.33. Ooh, eat shit, funny girl. Only has a 10. All right.
Not very macabre, funny girl.
Next category, wigs. On a scale of 0 to 100.
I mean, Bowie's wig is pretty iconic in this. I think if you just saw that wig, you would be like, oh, that's from Labyrinth.
That's right.
It's like, it looks like Marky Post from Night Court, like leveled up.
Yes. Yeah. It's her going to the premiere.
It is Marky Post meets Tina Turner from Thunderdome.
Yes.
She had that great headband. He doesn't have the headband because he doesn't need it. He just has that.
He's got so many cowls, though. Yeah. You know,
and, like... and also on that fancy ball, there's a lot of wigs there.
Yes. And Jennifer Connelly's hair is like ballooning.
Yep.
It's teased beyond. Teased
to the gods.
Teased to the gods. Not teased to filth.
And there's a lot of puppet wigs, which, you know, I think should be just considered.
Is there a difference between like a puppet wig? Because no puppet can grow their own hair.
Not that we know of.
Not yet. Okay,
not
fair.
Not yet. But just the amount of this film had, just by sheer amount of wigs, had a lot of wigs. But they may not be wigs that we would consider because they're on puppets. That's all I'm saying.
The fairies had wigs. They had those like Edgar Winter.
Yeah, they looked like the Thompson twins. They were like
really long, white. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very 80s aesthetic. So what do you want to give this for wigs?
I'm going to just based on the iconic David Bowie wig alone, I'm going to have to put this in the 90s. I'm going to put this at 94.
94.
I'm going to go 82.
82.
I wish they had, like, if he had, like, reinvented his wig one or two times.
Oh, he's on Evolution.
You know what I mean? Like, he could have come in a different... Yeah, it could have been different every single scene. That might be overkill, but a little bit of evolution would have been great.
Right.
A story through wigs.
But maybe if you feel like you nailed it the first time, like, how are we going to evolve
this? You can always
this?
Nail it again.
Hindsight's 20/20.
You
hindsight
wish.
Hindsight is 20/20.
You always have to... Okay.
There's things that we'll never get.
Yeah.
That's true.
True.
Yeah. We'll never know. I think this is like of iconic wigs. I would think if you're making a list of iconic wigs, I would expect Labyrinth to be on there.
Okay.
Maybe I'm crazy. So I'm going to give it an 85. All right. Next category, quips. How quippy is Labyrinth?
It's not very quippy, but I did like when David Bowie would tell the goblins that it was time for them to laugh. I thought that tickled me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also thought, what's his name, that dog who rode the other dog?
Sir Didymus.
Sir Didymus. He was kind of quippy, or he seemed to be,
sure.
Maybe.
What was one of your favorite quips of his, John?
Oh, just the way he was always like, hey, look at me, I'm Didymus.
Oh, that was so funny.
You can't cross if I don't let you. Uh-huh. You know, real quippy. I don't know, he just seemed to be like someone who you would sit down and... drink beers with.
Trade,
I don't know.
Which is what you look for in quips.
Yeah, exactly.
We just sit across and
I don't know. I was looking for something. It's not a very quippy movie.
It's not very. The only thing I notice is there's that one gun goblin who gets smashed and then he says, hey, no problem. Mm-hmm. It was like a Flintstones, uh-huh. It's a Living kind of.
Right, sure.
I would say that if the only line I can consistently quote is, she's in the oubliette, it's probably not. A very quippy movie. So, this is going to be probably in like a 23.
23.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go 15 for this one.
15. I'm going to go 9. It's not very quippy. Okay, next category, vibrato.
So for this, we mean, in addition to actual vibrato, it also means like anything extra, like anything like they zhuzh up or like give you a little bit more than maybe is necessary, but you still like it. Like they sort of like give you a little extra. So it's literal vibrato plus like that sort of the idea of vibrato. I think the rocks when they, Hagi and Sarah are like walking, they're like, turn back now. They were very vibrato-y. It was like a whole bunch of
the false
of, like,
alarms.
Is that what they were called?
They called them the false alarms.
Yeah. Oh, yes, yes, yeah. Those guys, they had like real thick vibrato in their voices.
They had a real tiki room vibe.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, there's no, I think, standard applied to singing vibrato, but they're definitely.
Yeah, Bowie doesn't
is,
have a big vibrato.
No, you can't jump hoops through that. But I do think there is a lot of like, there is a lot of emphasis on vocal. Special, you know, extra. There's a lot of extra.
Yeah,
you
know? Sure. So, what would you give that? How does that translate to an actual number?
It's a 41. It's a 41.
41. You try to be political.
Political, but when it comes down to it, yeah. You're getting what I think you deserve.
Yeah,
fair enough.
I'm gonna give it a 46. I really like those rocks.
46. I would say if we talk about vibrato in terms of being extra, I feel like the design, the production design is pretty extra in terms of like all the detail that goes into
sure.
everything. Like everything has like a weathered flag on it or like it's tattered or everything looks like lived in and oily or so I'm going to give it a 56.
All right.
And next category. This is the last of the canon categories. So footwork. What would you rate the footwork on a scale of 0 to 100?
There's a bunch of footwork in this
a
movie.
A lot of
There's
footwork.
There's like Jennifer Connelly again, like running. And then
the climax of the whole movie is about footwork, really.
Yeah.
And then
at one point, Jennifer Connelly literally says, well, come on, feet. Like she says to her feet, like,
sure.
Let's go.
Oh, she talks
so there you go.
To
She's
the feet.
She's making her feet work. And definitely, yeah, that MC Escher number at the end, there's a lot of crazy footwork going on there.
And then watching the big Ludo cross like the rock bridge, I was worried, like, how is this puppet gonna walk across this thing? That's got to be terrifying for that actor.
And from a nerdy puppeteer point of view,
please,
if you watch,
that's my favorite point of view.
There you go. Good. If you watch some of the way that the puppets are moving, you can only imagine what it must have looked like under the frame of all of these people maneuvering in and out of each other. So,
yeah,
for me, there's a lot of like things that look simple and normal were probably very, very difficult to do outside of that frame. So that's some
yeah, the footwork that we didn't see, but that we felt.
Yes.
Now, do we consider that?
It's
do
the footwork you don't see that matters.
Yes, that's right. I think absolutely.
I do have to say, like, Ludo is an incredible effect. Like, it looks amazing. Like, it looks better than, like, more recent CGI characters.
Well,
what I mean?
Because
like,
it's a real thing.
I know, but, like, how he even moves, like, even for a Muppet, it looks even better. You know what I mean? Just, like, it's so expressive and great. I don't know. Too bad we don't do enough of that anymore.
I'm going to write
So what do you want to give this? Dear Hollywood.
There ought to be a law.
More Ludos, please.
More Ludos, please. So what are you going to give it for footwork?
You know, footwork, I'm going to put this at 86.
86.
Yes. I'm going to go 88.
88. I'll split the difference and go 87.
Okay,
there we go.
Ready.
All right, so now we're into the wheel category. So this is four... you're going to get four categories. Each one's going to be random. They're previous guest categories
yes.
that are not canon.
So we're going to get, so here we go. We're going to spin the wheel. Flashback.
Flashback. Is there a flashback in this movie?
Is there a flashback in this movie?
Well, she goes back to like her bedroom, I guess, in a way.
Yeah.
And that's like that, not back in time. It's just...
Well, there's like all the stuff that's in like a lot of the images that are in the labyrinth and stuff you see hints of in her bedroom. So
yeah.
There's a way in which like all, the whole labyrinth itself you could say is somewhat of a flashback. There's also like,
more foreshadowing.
Sure. There's flashback. The bedtime story that she tells. That's sort of like a flashback. Like
well,
remember
she does
when this goblin thing happened.
She flashes back when she meets, you know, when she meets the junk lady. And she walks in and she sees her bedroom and she thinks it's her bedroom, but it's not really her bedroom. Like, there's this very strange kind of
going back in time feel.
Yeah,
to it.
Illusion thing of like, and she's like, no, stay. These are your things. And then she shatters that reality because that's when she realizes, no, it doesn't have my brother, and my brother's more important than a music box. You know, that kind of stuff. So
right.
There's not technically so a flashback, but.
So what would you give this on a scale of 0 to 100?
Because of its dreamlikeness, I'm going to put this at a 90.
90.
Yeah. I mean, it's a flashy back, but it's a, it's close.
It's the middle of the road back.
Yeah.
A workmanlike back. Yeah. I'm going to
middle of the road is a 90?
For flashbacks, you bet.
I'm going to go 18.
What?
18.
Okay. Wow.
There's not a lot of flashback in this movie.
No.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to give it a 12.
Holy crap. Flashback. I'm a real outlier on this. I don't think I know the
That's
definition
okay.
of flashback.
That's all right. All right, wheel category number 2.
Teamwork.
Teamwork. Oh. How much teamwork is in this movie?
I mean, I'd say as much as like good, the Wizard of Oz. This is a similar kind of.
I think a little less though, because like when she goes to her big battle, they're like, "We'll hang out here." I mean, like they're there for her.
No, yeah, they say we will go with you, and she says, "No, stay here."
Gotcha.
And I also the Helping Hands.
Yeah, those
what a crazy team! All those puppeteers too.
And at the very end, the whole message at the end is like, "Should you need us." You know, should you need us, we'll be here. Should you need... So the whole message at the end is like, we may not be... And then those characters disappear, but you see representations of those characters, like the doll on her bed is Hoggle. So you see like, oh, her friends... She's a really lonely girl. Her friends are stuffed.
She's got her team. Yeah. Also, I noticed when Sarah and Hoggy were running from that cleaner, they kept tripping and picking each other up. And I was like, they could have left... Either one of them could have left the other one to...
But they chose not to.
They chose to help each other. So there is definitely some teamwork going on here.
Yeah. So what do you want to give this?
Teamwork. Let's give this, let's keep this at a solid 83.
I'll give it a 79.
79. I'll give it a 69.
Yeah.
It's got some teamwork. Good for me. Thank you. All right. Wheel category number 3.
Shattered glass.
Okay,
we got some shattered glass in this movie.
We do have some shattered glass in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
More specifically, you have shattered mirrors, which are very representative.
Yes.
Something.
There's her bedroom mirror
Psyches
shatters.
And stuff.
The self, the identity.
She breaks one of the glass balls.
Oh, yeah.
Getting out of the masquerade ball is like the whole thing shatters.
When she gets out of
her
bedroom, she takes a chair and shatters that. There's a lot of shattered glass in there.
And pretty impactful, I would say. Is it John Wick 3? Absolutely not.
No, it isn't.
But it's not John Wick 3.
There is a dog in that, or at least a dog plot point.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Exactly.
So there's some pretty impactful. I would say that there's not a lot of shattered glass, but what there is pretty impactful.
Yeah.
They hone the focus in on the shattered glass.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They don't overdo it. So what do you want to give this?
Shattered glass, because it carries some weight, it has meaning in this film. Let's put this at a 90.
90.
I'm going to go 77.
Wow.
77. I'll go 75. Okay.
Alrighty.
Final wheel category.
Oh, legendary billboard.
Legendary billboards.
I didn't see any.
There aren't a lot there's no advertising in the labyrinth.
No, not at all. When you would have seen this in the film, though, his codpiece at one point on the big screen was maybe as big as a billboard.
That's
Absolutely.
True. Definitely but legendary.
No. But not a lot. There's a post box, a mailbox, when she's running through the town at the beginning.
It's true.
But is that a billboard? No.
And is it legendary? No.
No. So...
Boy, the creators really dropped the ball on this category.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If only there were more billboards in Labyrinth. So what are you going to give it, Ben?
I mean, I'm being generous with a 4.
A 4.
Yeah.
I'll give it a 2.
A 2, and I will complete the pattern and give it a 0. Yeah. All right.
I counted the mailbox.
Okay, fair enough.
Sure.
All right, Ben, the time has come for you to add a category which could become canon, but for now will just be added to the wheel for the next dozen episodes or so. So what category would you like to add through which we can view future movies to judge how gay they are?
Ooh, noticeable teeth.
No, you're saying noticeable the more teeth? Noticeable teeth?
Yeah.
The gayer
the movie is?
No, I don't know. I just want to know if, like, if I watch a movie and as I'm watching it, I go, look at that person's teeth. Distracting teeth, I think, is an interesting category. For better or for
that
worse.
That makes it gayer?
I don't know if it makes it gay. If they're really good teeth, that just maybe means that they're just better put
really?
Together. And then I have a personal opinion that says most of my gay friends are better put together than I am.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So,
is it maybe something
know.
About like maybe a smile, like a great smile or something? Like
let's say.
Maybe. How
smile?
About this? How about this? How about this? Does it make you question your sexuality?
That's true.
Ooh, a good set of chompers sometimes does. Let's do wry smiles.
Okay, fair enough.
Wry smiles. All righty.
So, what would you give Labyrinth for wry smiles?
Oh, I mean, David.
I mean,
that's
pretty much all of David Bowie's performance.
That's his all of
his performance
acting.
Is a wry smile.
It is.
Yeah,
it is. Mm-hmm. So, I'm gonna give based on wry smiles. I'm gonna get. You know, it's like it's that smile that's like, I've got a secret you don't know it. we got to give
good.
Thank you. We got to give David Bowie an 84 for wry smiles.
84.
Yeah. They don't do a close up, but
no. But you got to get the wry smile and the codpiece in the same shot.
Thank
so,
you.
I'm gonna
they don't
give
make
it
lenses big enough.
I'm gonna give it a 92.
Wow.
92.
You're welcome.
I'll give it a 90. I mean, it's David Bowie. What the hell?
Yeah. If there was a scene where he looked at his codpiece in the same shot and then looked up directly into the camera and gave a wry smile and added a wink, then it'd be 100.
Yeah.
That's the criteria.
And he went, changes. Mm-hmm. all right. We are now into the bonus category. So you will not be penalized for not scoring well on these, but these are just all bonus points you could add.
These are a percentage bonus we get to choose from 0 to 5.
All right.
So 0 to 5% bonus. So the first bonus category, makeover montage.
There isn't really a makeover montage.
There's
in this
no
movie.
Montage no. in this movie.
Zero.
So I'm afraid I have to go 0.
0. Wow.
Okay.
Tough luck. All right. Next one. This might also be tough. Angry phone hangups.
Was there one at the beginning when they were like, call the restaurant or something like that? I felt like in all of their barking at the very beginning, someone had to make a phone call. And they were very agitated about the whole thing.
I think there are angry, there's like angry door acting or like doorway acting and like huffs.
That's
there's
true.
A few like huff moments, but there's no slamming mm-hmm. of the phone.
What's the thing that David Bowie, she's in the what again?
She's in the oubliette.
The boudelium.
The oubliette.
She's in, if only she said, if only he was like on the phone with the goblin, you know, she's in the oubliette and then slammed down the phone.
Right.
Yeah, but that doesn't happen.
He'd have to look at the phone, look like take the phone away from his face and look into the receiver. She's in the oubliette. I always loved that.
Yeah.
And then
yeah. 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 So what do you want to give this for angry phone hangups?
I mean, 0. Now, someone I'm sure will be like, no, remember? She hung up a phone, but I don't remember, so it doesn't count.
Yeah, go 0 as well.
Yeah,
I think you got to go 0 for Labyrinth, and it's angry phone hangups.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next bonus category, titular theme song. I mean, there's no song that is Labyrinth.
Called Labyrinth. But there's like a song, there's like an opening title credit
there
song,
is a
right?
track, and this is a track I know. It's called Into the Labyrinth.
Okay.
Yes.
It's a score. It's a piece of score by Trevor Jones. And it's the one that sounds exactly like the Law and Order soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's the same instrumentation. I'll post a link to it, but tell me I'm wrong. But it sounds exactly like the Law and Order. So there is like, but it's not like a, It's just a piece
not
of
Not Love
score.
Theme from Titanic. Titanic, right. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But people know,
but there's, like,
iconic
song. I feel like Magic Dance Magic is, like, the Dance. Iconic song from the...
Yeah.
People remember Magic
Dance. I could give it 1% for this.
You're going to give it a 1?
I'm going to give it a 2.
2. All right. I'll give it a 2. Yeah. Magic Dance, pretty great.
Magic Dance.
Yeah.
That's probably the best song in the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, next category. Fun fonts.
I think the opening credits are fun.
Yeah. Very fun.
The font on the book that it says The Labyrinth on it that she's reading her lines from, that's a fun little
font
on
that
book. Sure. It feels very
appropriate. Times New Roman.
Okay.
I love whenever the font matches the poster, though, in the movie. Mm-hmm. And this one does. And it's even plussed because it's like this teal outline with dark clouds behind it. It looks great.
Yeah.
Very fun fonts.
Yeah. I give this a 3 for fun font.
3.
I'll go 3 as well.
3. I'm going to go 4.
Ooh.
Wow.
I think it's pretty fun. It's also a font that tells you, oh, it's a fantasy movie.
Right, yeah.
All right, next category. Cheerworthy cameos.
Okay, well, we've mentioned her already, but Patti LuPone showing up on a poster of Evita and Jennifer Connelly's
sure,
role.
Sure, that's true.
Definitely. I got excited about that.
You also see the Disney animated Robin Hood, the fox, is like on her like scrapbook.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, see, so this is, I never would have thought of this until this kind of forensic work. But the sheer fact that it is Patti LuPone, a poster for Cats, that kind of stuff, making its appearance this soon in the film with such confidence and full force behind her, this is a 4.
Sure. A 4?
Yeah.
For 2 posters.
Yeah, but right. Think about those posters are.
But it's Patti LuPone, and this is 2 old queens.
Sure.
I'm going to go 3.
3. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go 2.
Okay.
They're all inanimate. All right. Next category, pool trouble.
We got that swamp of terrible smell, whatever it's called.
Eternal stench?
Oh, the bog of eternal stench, the muddy
bog. The bog of eternal stench.
I would say a bog is like a kind of a pool.
Yeah, exactly. A cesspool.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I'm going to go 5 because it's a 5. Big plot point. There, if you fall in that pool, you're in trouble.
I mean, but you can still complete the story. You just stink.
But you will, for the rest of
eternity. For the rest of your life, you stink.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean,
that is trouble right there. With the
I mean, these
T.
days, that wouldn't matter too much.
No, okay. No, but at the, he almost dips his toe in that. He almost dips his toe in that butthole juice. I'm giving that a 5.
Yeah.
5. I'm going to give it a 3 because, yes, it is trouble, but no one ever actually gets in. There isn't any pool. It's just the threat of trouble. So I would give it higher if there was more actual trouble.
Okay.
All right. Next category. Sassy best friend. That bird on that wise man's head is pretty sassy.
That bird is pretty sassy. Do we think Ludo is sassy in his way?
No. He's sad and like gentle.
Okay.
He's just the biggest one, but doesn't want to fight.
I think the two dogs, the dog riding the other dog, there's something fun and sassy about those two.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And they're dogs, so they're man's best friends, but they're each other's best friends. So I think this is pretty high.
Meta.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of sassy best friend that's going on in this movie.
Yeah.
And there's some sassy attitude coming from Hoggle there, too, about, like, he doesn't want to help. He harumphs and, and then he ends up like, oh, all right, I'm going to. But he definitely bitches the entire way.
Mm-hmm.
So he's, there's a 4 on the Sasso meter from a couple 4. Of different characters.
Yeah, I'm going to go 4 as well.
No.
4. I'm going to go 3.
Okay.
All right, next category. A bold lip.
There's a bunch because I think when she was in that thing with all the helping hands, they were the lips.
Those are very bold.
That was pretty
lips.
Bold. That door knocker who had like the knocker in his lips.
Yeah.
That's pretty bold. And then
Jareth
at the ball.
Has a pretty bold lip.
Yeah. And Jennifer Connelly, when she showed him that ball gown, she had a very bold pink, bubblegum pink lip at the ball.
Sure.
So there are some lips that make themselves known in this movie.
So what do you want to give this?
I'm going to say 4.
I will say 4 as well. I mean, if it wasn't for that one lip on the door knocker, it couldn't hold the ring.
That's right. I am also going to give it a 4.
Nice.
All right. Next category, witches. Well, David Bowie's essentially a witch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then also, like, Jennifer Connelly does, like, summon the Goblin King at the beginning. You know what I mean? Like, she does sort of cast a spell. At the
she
beginning.
Casts a spell.
There's something sort of witchy about her as well.
She's, like, bewitching. Does that count?
Oh, sure.
Sure, it could be, maybe.
Well, then it's a four.
A four.
I'm going to go three.
Three. I'm going to go five. I mean, it's a Goblin King. He's a witch.
Okay. All right.
Literally, he has crystal balls. I mean, what more does a witch need to do to get fair, your respect?
Fair. I forgot that was a prerequisite.
Thank you. All right, next category. On a scale of 0 to 5%, how Korean is Labyrinth?
Korean?
Yes. That's... you did hear that correctly.
Okay, cool. That one got me. You know what, though? When you really think about it?
Let's think about it.
It's pretty Korean.
Please.
Okay.
I think it may. I mean, there's no representation. So let me be very clear. There is no good, solid representation. But yes. Aesthetically,
oh,
you know, if just as far as, I don't know, there's something, I can't explain it without knowing what I'm talking about, but there's something.
There's something Korean about
yeah.
it.
So from 0 to 5, what would
zero
you say?
0 to 5.
It's like there's a one that? There. There's at least a one. There's a one.
A one.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go 0.
0. You know what? I'm going to go 0.5.
Hey,
okay. Right. You'd love to go 0.5 on Korean.
You know, I think Korean people would like it.
Sure.
And I bet it has a huge fan base.
I don't think there's anything anti-Korean about it.
No. All right, next category. This might do well. Felt.
Oh.
How much felt is in Labyrinth?
Well, what's sort of ironic about this category is that it came about because of the Muppets Take Manhattan. When we believed that puppets were made of felt, we found out later that that is basically not true. We have also learned that felt is a process, but this is a very puppety movie, obviously. There's only two main characters that are people.
If you ever wanted to expand this category, you could also use the other iteration of this word, which is felt, you know?
That's a, you're absolutely right.
Now,
wow, you even conveyed that without the visual.
Thank you. You know, it's all in the pause. Mm-hmm. So in both realms, though, knowing what you mean by both terms, I'm gonna give this.
Mm-hmm, sure.
I'm gonna give this a four.
Four.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go five on this one.
Yeah.
Well, she has a ton of stuffed animals.
Oh,
yeah, a lot of stuffed animals.
I'm gonna go four, because now that we know these Muppets aren't made of felt. Mm. Sure. And these ones also don't look like the Muppety Muppets. They're like rubbery or what. Yeah. I don't know what anything is made out of, but I'm sure all these puppets are now dissolved in a pool somewhere. Mm-hmm. There's your pool trouble.
There you go.
All right. Next category, 0 to 5%. Gay actors playing gay roles.
We don't really have any gay roles in this movie.
We don't really.
So, and so if they did, a gay actor didn't play them.
That's true.
Right. Unless, I mean, how did David Bowie identify? As bisexual?
I think so.
I think ultimately he was like, it was the 60s, and he kind of like, he did it as like a goof to see what would happen. And like, he wasn't anti, but it just like, it wasn't for him, but he liked playing with the idea of sexuality.
Yeah, I think him and...
I mean, that's what glam was, you know?
But didn't he like, yeah, him and Mick Jagger hook up or something?
Yeah, I think him and...
I don't think he was like... He was pretty much straight, though.
But they just did it for the bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were making Dancing in the Streets together. I think it was just
sure.
I think it was just like, dance, well,
like, let's do the metaphor.
Yeah, let's we're here. Yeah. So let's see what happens.
We're not queer.
No, but we are.
We're
here.
Used to it.
Yeah.
Yes, that's half the battle. So what do you want to give this for gay actors playing gay roles?
I'm going to use the Korean 0.5 that you like to use.
A 0.5, fair enough.
For Bowie.
I'm going to do that too. That's a good move.
2.5s. Next category, themes of mothers.
I mean, that is, you know, Jennifer Connelly and her mom fight a lot at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And like, she has a maternal, Sarah's pretty maternal about, you know, finding
her
brother. But it's not a huge,
it's not a real
healing a rift
movie.
With your mother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're not talking Florida Project.
No.
It's a one. It's a one for me, dog. It's a one.
It's a one.
I'll give it a one. Yeah, that feels
it's a
right.
one for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm also giving it a one. All right, next category: a feels song. Is there a song that puts you in your feels in this?
Not overtly.
The slow songs are pretty forgettable. I feel like
yeah, there's a nostalgia factor to some of the songs, but
yes,
that's more to do with. I think that's more to do with the instrumentation in the movie, that it was in that movie. But as far as the song outside of that movie by itself, I don't think so.
So what do you want to give it?
Let's do a two. I'm going to do a two.
A two.
Yeah, I feel bad because I feel like none of the songs are really memorable. And like even watching it again, I wasn't tempted to be like, oh, let me download some of these songs or something like that.
Who's downloading music still, John?
Well,
how
you know
old
what
are
I mean.
You?
Okay.
We're streaming music.
Alrighty.
These days.
Well, I didn't go to look for it. I'm going to give it a zero, unfortunately.
Zero. I'll give it a one for Magic Dance. I think that song is a blast of nostalgia. All right. Next one. Gossip. How gossipy is Labyrinth? Well, the goblins are telling him, well, now she's up to this place. She's made it this far. They're kind of gossiping about, like,
is that
Sarah's
gossip or is that news?
Is there a difference?
Yeah.
Tell TMZ.
Okay.
Well, they are, know the difference. You know, now you have to, they are hiding out in her closet at the beginning, and they're very close, and they're whispering, and they're waiting for her to say the words. Uh-huh. And like, oh, is she going to say it? She's going to say it. Oh, no, shut up. She's going to say it. So there is a little pick, a little talk, a little going on right there.
There is true.
That first
true.
Shot where they just cut to a bunch of those goblins, that whole the opening of the movie where the magic starts to enter is really creepy.
Terrifying.
It's really good. Yeah. It's like that's probably my favorite part of the movie is like when you see them like in the background, like running by.
Yeah, that scared the hell out
of
me.
That's
as
great.
A kid.
It's really good.
I'm gonna put this at just because of that scene, I never thought about it as gossipy, but they really are like hush, you know, there is this little like hubbub. I'm going to put that at a two.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it at a two.
Two.
I'll give it a one for that.
One. I will also give it a one. All right. This is the second to last final whatever category. This is an all or nothing. Ooh. So you get 15% bonus points if this movie has a positive portrayal of homosexuality. I don't think it does.
I don't think it does. I don't think it qualifies for that.
Yeah, not overtly. No.
Not overt. No. And we're looking for overt.
I mean, it's not thinly veiled either, but it is not.
That's true.
Right, yeah.
All right, finally, negative 50% points if this is the movie Cruising.
This is not the movie Cruising, so we'll not be penalized 50% of its points.
Okay, so in the final tally...
Are you ready, Ben? How well do you think you did now that we have gone through?
This movie, you guys, there were highs, there were lows. I felt like the rating of this film existed on the extremes. There was very few middle of the roads. This movie
True.
Either did...
Not a lot of 50s.
This movie either said something or said nothing. But I felt like it said something more than nothing, so I'm going to put it on the higher range.
Okay. All right. Well, I can tell you, out of a total possible 2,653.85 points, Labyrinth has scored 1,990.52, giving a percentage of 75 on the dot, making it the fifth gayest movie ever.
Wow.
So not as gay as Funny Girl, but gayer than Interview with the Vampire.
Wow.
Which
this
is
makes
saying
sense
something.
To me.
That had
Honestly,
actual gay people in it.
This feels like maybe one of the more accurate polling systems that I've
Thank
ever
you.
Encountered.
Thank you.
It
makes
it's
perfect
a,
sense.
Always, yeah. It's always yeah. a work
it's
in
pretty
progress.
Airtight. It's pretty airtight.
It's like Disneyland, though. It will never be finished.
No. It really is.
It shouldn't be.
Wow. No, it should never be. Wow, this was good. I'm glad I cracked my suggestion, at least cracked the top five.
Yes, congratulations.
I mean, yes, congratulations. Well, Ben, that's the show. Thank you so much for doing this. Is there anything you would like to plug, promote, or shill for at this time?
Wear a damn mask. That's all. Just that. And wash your hands and stay healthy and happy.
Wonderful.
Aww,
that's it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, thanks, Ben.
This was a pleasure, Alrighty. My friends. Thank you.
We'll
be right back. We're back.
That worked.
Freshly did it? Okay, great. It worked.
Yeah.
Well, that was so much fun.
That was more fun than the actual movie.
Yeah. I actually think this movie, they should redo it as a musical, because I think what musicals do well, which is like get to like the emotional part of a character story. I think if they flesh out the main character Sarah's story and give her like more of like something that she wants and something that she's fighting, it could be
enough with the reboots. Give me something new, John.
Okay, Mark.
Although I did enjoy the Dark Crystal Netflix series that was out like a few months ago.
Yeah. Oh,
that's
yeah, that's
fabulous.
Great.
Everyone should watch. I loved it. Couldn't get
yeah,
enough.
Yeah, it was like Dark Crystal as Game of Thrones. It was great.
It was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what else is amazing? Some of the reviews we've gotten.
Oh,
see, I'm not good with segues. We got one here from KMAC77 with two exclamation points, and it says, another straight ally gives us 5 stars and says, I just wanted to add my voice to the population of cisgender hetero males that listen to and live your podcast, I think live for. With that description, I first heard you on High and Mighty and was so excited when you started your own podcast. I wish I had any ideas to help with the scoring system, but I'm bad at math. I like what you come up with, and you make me laugh out loud every week and revisit some of my old faves like Showgirls. It's the best. Thank you.
I'm so glad we can make cisgendered straight white men laugh. They don't have enough going on for them.
Hey, now, let's not be mean to our fan.
He can take it.
We also have one from Cara Bobara. It says, too much fun, 5 stars. I usually listen to a healthy balance of comedic and spooky, read true crime podcasts, but pretty much everything has been put on hold since I found Two Old Queens. I can't stop listening, and I'm already sad to know that someday soon I'll be caught up and we'll have to wait a whole week for a new release. John and Mark have such great chemistry, and the guests are just as much fun. Thank you for continuing to record during quarantine. We all need it. Well, thank you, Cara.
Thank you. I feel like we kind of got it down, maybe. Yeah. I hope. I feel like we're using microphones
now.
We're using
better microphones. It's not just the Zoom mics. No. Yeah, we're getting there. We're all doing our best, and thanks for not complaining about it.
Thank you.
Yes. We also have an email from a guy named Pete, and he says, hello, friend of the pod, longtime listener, first-time caller. Wow, Windows, this is definitely a movie I would never have known existed if it weren't for this podcast. I'm with Drew. It's one of the ugliest movies ever. This movie isn't tan. It's the beigest of beige. But what I want to know is, was this happening while the women of 9 to 5 were doing their thing uptown? Shared universe?
Oh,
that would be a fun overlap, a Windows 9 to 5 overlap.
It's possible. I feel like the 9 to 5 girls would have taken care of this psycho lesbian, though. They would have like had her strung up in a attic somewhere.
I don't know. Who would you rather have? You have to fight Mr. Hart or this crazy psycho lesbian? Lying, hypocritical bigot.
I mean, but she's like a crazy psycho bitch. This is like an Avengers. I don't know. I hope that's the same. I mean, they're both New York.
Is 9 to 5 in New York?
Yeah. Big business, baby.
Okay. The only
or is it Los Angeles? It might be Los Angeles. I think it's Los Angeles.
Okay. Well, either way, you're not sure, and you just yelled at me.
Well, Lily Tomlin fixes a garage. You can't do that in New York.
Well, but she could have been a suburb of New Jersey or something.
No.
Okay. Very sure about this. And I don't know why. I wish
I think
had
it's
your
California.
Confidence.
I want to say California.
I'm not opposed to it being California.
All right.
So maybe that doesn't work, but who knows?
I'm sure we could Google right now, but we're recording. And
we're
I don't
recording.
Like when
it's
people
tough.
Google things when they're in
much.
The middle of things.
Then Pete
I need to listen to someone type.
Only there's a way we could edit that out. Pete goes on to recommend he wants to know why no one brought in Soap Dish. He also wants True Beverly Hills, Death Becomes Her, Mamma Mia 1 or 2.
I mean, yes, to all. I
yeah,
love
all
the Mamma Mia franchise.
Mm-hmm. No one's brought those in yet.
Nope.
Crazy.
Well, thank
well,
you.
Thank
I
you,
hope someone does.
Yeah,
I'm sure we'll get to all of these. Don't worry.
It sounds yeah. Cool.
We had to do Scrooged.
What can you do? It was the holidays. We had to get something. So thank you guys so much for reviewing. Please continue to rate and review and send us emails. Let us know what you like. If you have any questions or thoughts, again, we're thinking about doing a Patreon. Let us know if there's anything you want to hear us talk about specifically for that. You can email us at twooldqueens. It's spelling at twooldqueens@gmail.com.
Or you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at twooldqueens, T-W-O, old queens. Give us a follow or follow me on Letterboxd to see the current rankings.
Yes.
Of all the gayest movies. It's a
all
fun
the
time.
Gayest movies. It's a fun time. And then our
and
movie
what are we
week?
Doing next week? We next do know week. What we're doing
we
next
week. We do know
week.
What we're doing next week. We are going downtown.
A little shop of horrors.
A little shop of horrors. Very excited. Very, it's a great movie. Fun.
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
So watch it.
Check it. Yeah, check that out and prepare. Then come back next week.
Yes, we'll see you next time.
All right. Good.
Goodbye. I'm afraid of Americans.
Now it's time for credits. We got music by Danny Cohen.
Artwork by Connie Shin.
And special thanks to Alex Arche and Mike Rennie.
Bye.
Bye. We didn't get that right.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.